Right. Okay, I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order, April 16th, 2004. Mara, can you determine a quorum?
Yes. Student rep Charlotte Martin. Sarah Holmgren.
Here.
Jay Lister.
Here.
Carrie Case.
Here.
Katie Holmland.
Here.
Nicole Olson.
Here. All right, we're all here. Rise to the.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
I will make a motion to approve April 16th agenda. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Katie. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next, we'll move on to our student presentation from close-up. I think Mrs. Martin and Ms. Cabral are gonna give us an overview of their trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So those that are listening, we're going to be watching something on the screen about their trip to Washington, D.C. and New York.
Well, I want to start off by thanking Chris Hiddems, who put the slideshow together. We discovered Band app among many apps that were great for communicating with parents and for sharing some of these photos. So we started off by leaving school on a Friday right after, actually before class was dismissed, yes. I think. Got to SeaTac, took the red eye to Newark, and then boarded a train from Newark to DC because at the time we were purchasing tickets, that was the cheapest route to go. We thought it'd be fun to try taking a train. Most of the kids slept on the journey to DC because they were exhausted. And when we got there, we went outside and took a peek and a photo in front of the Capitol building with all our luggage, and then went inside and enjoyed the architecture of Union Station and grabbed some lunch. We met three, could I say alumni on the trip, one of which was Helen Martin, my daughter. So she helped us navigate our first metro trip.
We only lost two children.
Found them. Yes. Thankfully, Helen was our caboose. She knew how to reconnect them to us, and we didn't lose anybody else the rest of the trip. So that was a good way to start. So the subway was an adventure, or metro was an adventure for us. We dropped off our bags, checked out the Pentagon and the 9/11 memorial, just to kind of stretch our legs, and also because we knew we were headed to New York City, and we kind of wanted the students to be able to see kind of, I guess, a little bit more about the events of the day and why they're so significant. We were housed in some lovely hotels, and they fed us well and gave us vouchers to go to the mall and some other places around D.C. The next morning, some students wanted to meet up with family members. Trent met up with his sister, Leah Kittums, and three of our students, including Ashley Eilenberger, met up with Stacy, who was there. So that was really fun to get to see, for the kids to get to see their peers now as adults living outside of Petersburg. But all three of those women were participants of PHS's previous close-up trips. So we went to the National Cathedral and then followed that up in the afternoon with a visit to the Holocaust Museum, and then walked out to the mall, which is right there, to enjoy some of the sunshine and some of the Lime scooters and the other, all the huge crowds.
The trucks.
Yeah.
All the food trucks. They lined up.
Then the next day, the program officially began, and the students were kind of off on their own. So this is some of the what they saw around the basin there. And we had peach, cherry blossom, an added bonus.
Back when that's Stumpy, the famous cherry blossom, apparently.
So they're replacing quite a few of those cherry trees because they were a gift from the Japanese government and have kind of lived out their lives, and now they're going to be replaced. So we kind of got to see it at full bloom, and it will be a while before it looks quite so spectacular. Some more of the monuments, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The tree to find the Alaska Monument at the World War II Memorial. Lincoln Memorial, although it's not pictured, the Korean War Memorial and the Vietnam War Memorial. And then on Wednesday, we got to go to the Capitol building where Helen and Senator Sullivan's staffers took us on a tour of the Capitol building. We saw our statue. There are two statues for each state. So we got to see Ernest Gruning, which is one of our statues, and then the replica of the Statue of Freedom, which is on top of the Capitol building. These are photos of the old Senate chamber, but we actually got to go into the current Senate chambers. Of course, they didn't let us take pictures, but we went from the throngs of people in the visitor center to the other, I don't know, dozen people in
the Senate. We got a special treatment because of Helen working there. So that was great. Mm-hmm. And it was even more security getting into the actual current Senate room. So that was actually pretty amazing to be able to be in there.
And the Senate was not in session, which was one of the reasons we did that. We did get to walk through Representative Peltola's office on our way to lunch. And then we met with the staffers, as I mentioned. This is the whole Alaska delegation. We had students from Dillingham and
Cordova.
And it was very relaxed because it was Easter recess, but it was kind of nice because most of these staffers are young, and they had a chance to really talk to the high schoolers about opportunities that exist for them, both as high school students and as college students. And then we rode the
Senate train.
I don't know what it's called actually to the Capitol.
Which is not everyone off. Does not get to that also. That was another special treat for us because of Helen. So
then in the afternoon, well, I should back up. Early in the morning, Heidi, Matt, Bob, Helen, and I sat there with our devices because we didn't know our schedule to the very last minute. And most of these places, you have to have tickets to go in. Not that they're paid tickets, but they're time tickets, just so that there aren't crowds. So we sat there with our devices at different times before the day started, and we're able to get a few tickets at some of the sites that the students wanted to see. So
usually you can only buy six at a time. So you get six, she gets six, he got six, then went to the next museum, tried to get them and stuff.
Yeah, so we had a few go to the Air and Space. Almost everyone who wanted to got to go to the Library of Congress. We had some go to the African American Museum and the National Archives.
Yes, I mean, have any Native
No, nobody got in.
And I actually want to back up because there's no pictures. Yeah, there's okay. There's no pictures.
Oh,
but a special and unknown kind of, I feel like, to public, if you ever go and want to go down onto the floor of the Library of Congress, you just have to go and get a library card, and then you are allowed to. Otherwise, you are not allowed to go down onto the floor of the Library of Congress. So we were able to do that as adults.
Yeah. And the other thing this picture doesn't show is as soon as we got done eating lunch, Matt took six and took the Uber to the African American Museum. Then he took off and we got basketball tickets. While Heidi and I took the kids to the Library of Congress. And I, Brent, took an Uber to go get the kids at the African American Museum to bring them back to the Library of Congress. I mean, that's kind of what it was like. We had a jam-packed, absolutely fabulous trip.
Yeah, very eventful. There was no downtime.
No. And then this was watching the Washington play Brooklyn Nets, and it went into overtime, which was super exciting. So this was right after the Alaska State Basketball Championships. And then the last full day, they got to see the White House, and the Arlington National Cemetery, the changing of the guard, Marine Corps Memorial, and the Air Force Memorial. And then they had a banquet the last night. We were very well represented by Kinley Lister and Evan Ware, and then Trent Kittums, who gave speeches representing their group. During the week, the students were split up. And Charlotte, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but kind of divided up so that they could meet students from other states, other communities of different sizes, and discuss some of the current events that are affecting our nation. And then on Friday, we all boarded buses and headed to New York City. Again, this was an opportunity for a lot of students and their teachers to catch a little sleep. The students got to go through Central Park to the Metropolitan Museum of Art for Egyptian and medieval art exhibits, and the European art exhibit was a favorite with the teens. That night we got to see Spamalot performed on Broadway. That was well received by most of the students. And then after hours, Matt and Heidi were troopers. How many students did you take out into Times Square?
I only took two the first night, but I think he took quite a few the second night. I was nervous taking out too many kids at night.
It is almost like day in the middle of Times Square at night, the light levels, and there is a lot of security. And the next day we got to go to Liberty Island and see the Statue of Liberty with some great views of Manhattan. And then they went to Ellis Island and got to explore the National Museum of Immigration. They walked across the Brooklyn Bridge, and they got to visit the 9/11 Memorial at the World Trade Center. And then the last full day we were there, they got to go to the top of the Rock to see the skyline from Rockefeller Center. And then the journey home started at 5:30 a.m. plus about 20 minutes of wrangling some stragglers. There were a lot of things we learned on this trip. I think some people learned that this was a group tour and the difference that makes.
And timing is everything.
But two subway trips later, we got to JFK Airport, flew cross country, flew to Ketchikan, got into Ketchikan, stayed there for the night, had a lovely dinner that Heidi organized in Ketchikan. And Adrian has a little penguin that he brought, photographed the whole trip, and so this is a picture of his penguin, and I understand his penguin now has two more family members picked up at the gift shop.
Josh went on a lot of cross-country trips.
I want to thank you as a school board for supporting this incredibly valuable educational experience. I want to thank Jamie Cabral and Viking Travel for making arrangements for us to go. I want to thank the Elks for supporting us with fundraisers and the very generous support of Hammer and Weekon for grocery bags and other food for our fundraisers. And again, thank the incredibly generous community of Petersburg for supporting these kids and providing them with an opportunity to see a part of the world that some of them have never seen before. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
That's a great trip.
Yeah. How much longer will Helen stay in D.C.? How many more trips can we get out of her?
We just need to move people up there. Yeah.
We need more students.
And we've already had a very generous anonymous donor contribute to the fund for 2025.
Wow.
So that's exciting, too.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Great.
All right, Tom. Next, I think we have two student representative reports. We'll start maybe with the kids. Ruger and Lachlan. They're going to give us an update on the elementary.
I'm Lachlan Boyder. I'm a student council representative at Stedman Elementary. Our Stedman Student Council is doing a fundraiser in May called Lemonade for a Cause. We are raising money for the families affected by the mudslide in Wrangell.
I am Rigger Fitchy. I am Vice President of Student Council, and our goal is to have as much support as we can raise funds around the community. We will be doing the first free Thursdays in May outside the elementary school. Please spread the word out and come try our tasty lemonade. Miss Miller's fifth grade class has pen pills. Annie White's fifth grade class in Juno will be visiting our town for Mayfest. Our class has been writing them back and forth each month. Being excited to meet our pen pals. Also, fifth grade is writing our own play this year. We are excited to perform the School of Rock on May 9th and 10th.
Muskeg Maliers visit next week to paint with fifth graders to paint Velkommen signs for Mother's Day. We are keeping the rose milling tradition alive. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. Nice job, guys. All right, now we'll have our second student representative report, Charlotte Martin.
That was great. That was a really fun trip, and I think everyone really enjoyed it. The ASB doesn't have anything officially to report on today, but something fun today was for Alaska History. The senior class got to go over to Wrangell. We took the ferry over at about 9 o'clock and we spent the day there. We went to the museum. We saw the petroglyphs, Cheekshake's house, and some other sites around Wrangell. And then we got back at about like 4:30 today. And the weather was really nice and people had a lot of fun. So.
Nice. I had to ride the ferry.
Funny looking one. It was a small one. We took it from Banana Point and the party buses.
Oh, got it. Okay. There, so. Nice. Thank you. Any questions? No? Okay. Next, we're going to move on to a presentation for the Coalition for Education Equity. Caroline Storm from the Coalition of Education Equity will present information about their advocacy work in Alaska. The Coalition is heavily invested in advocating for an increase to the base student allocation now and into the next legislative session. Should these advocacy efforts not yield a significant permanent and inflation-adjusted increase to the BSA, they are preparing to use the court system to pressure the legislature and governor to meet their constitutional obligation to provide an adequate education system to the state. Petersburg School District is considering joining other school districts as a member of this coalition. Is she online or? Okay,
great. I am online. Can you hear me?
Oh, great. Thank you.
I don't know if you can see me, but I'm here.
If you, Carolyn, if you share your screen, you can walk through your presentation, or I do have a copy and I can share my screen so you can see what I'm throwing up on the board.
Do you have a problem? I will share the presentation with any kind of luck here. Can you see that?
We do. Yeah. And we see you.
Okay, both. Wow. Okay, great. This is a little strange because I can't see you, but I'll do my best. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to present to you this evening. Let me just go to slideshow. I don't do a lot of these online. So, well, that's not the right screen. All right, hang on just a second, just technical difficulties. I'm just gonna stick with this. All right. So I also wanted to let you know that CUSPIC voted this week to join the coalition, which we're very excited about. So the Coalition for Education Equity was formed in 1996 and by Superintendent Spike Jorgensen with the explicit mission to change the way that districts were given funds for capital improvements, because at that time there was an inequitable way that districts were provided capital funds. REAAs were getting the short end of the stick. And so the Coalition for Education Equity was successful in that suit, and five new schools were built in Gateway District, Northwest Arctic Borough, and I can't remember the other ones, but so that was quite some time ago, obviously. And our mission is to champion a quality, equitable, and adequate public education for every Alaska child. And that is primarily through advocacy, although we have, as I just said, filed two lawsuits in the past. I am new to this position, and under our former director, Sarah Sledge, there was a lot of policy development. And then, of course, we do take legal action when required. Our interpretation of an adequate public education is an education that provides a child or young adult with the tools necessary for pursuing any path that they desire after public school. I wanted to give a quick introduction to me. I'm sorry. I have only been in this position since September of last year. I am Canadian by birth. I was educated in Canada and South Africa. I was born to immigrant parents. That is no surprise, valued public education. I am an architect by training. I've been living in Alaska since 2002. And I both thank and curse Representative Elise Galvin for getting me into this work, because I joined Great Alaska Schools in 2015 when my own son's Ignite program was on the chopping block at ASD, and you know, begun to understand what the funding issues were in our districts, which obviously was not at district level, but primarily at the state level. And although I am not an educator, I do volunteer with the Alaska Literacy Program and teach civics for citizenship, which I will just share that gives me an understanding of how much teachers are invested in their students, because I love my students and I am very invested in their success to become citizens. The Coalition is a member-driven organization or member-supported organization. Each district, we currently are primarily made up of districts with NEA as one of our corporate members, and I have a corporation in Anchorage contemplating joining CEE. That each member has one seat on our board of directors. We really only meet once a year, and sometimes our executive board meets a few more times during the year. The school district representative is the superintendent or another individual designated by the superintendent. We set annual priorities, especially going into the legislative session. And obviously over the last 3 years, definitely the last two, we've been advocating for a permanent increase to the BSA. And we were very close until the governor vetoed it in about a month and a half ago. So as I originally pointed out, we were founded in 1996 as the Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children. You can see why we changed the name in 2015. We successfully litigated Casile and Moore, seeking to change the way districts were funded through legislative action. Changed our name in 2015. Wow, I'm really bad at this. I'm sorry. Casile, I just talked through just because it's so instrumental to the founding and setting ultimately the priorities for the coalition that we've, you know, been practicing for the last 20 years or more. Moore was an interesting case that I have just recently found out why the case was settled after 8 years of litigation. And I'm not quite at liberty to say why that is. However, it is changing the lens through which we are going to pursue litigation later this year if the BSA is not permanently increased, because as you well know, I think we're out of options after limping through one-time funding for the last, I guess we're coming on 7 or 8 years now. The positive rulings that came out of Moore will allow the coalition to build upon those rulings. And what is sort of weighing in our favor as we move forward looking at litigation again is the number of evidence-based adequacy studies that have been done over the last decade, let's just say the last decade, by firms like Pikus and Auden, but more significantly realizing that the state has never done its own adequacy study, and thus we aren't actually basing education funding, public education funding, on any hard metrics or data. It's purely political. I'm going to pause there and just ask if anyone has any questions.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we're good.
I am moving kind of quickly because as somebody who's also served on boards, I don't want to take up a lot of your time when you have a piece of paper in front of you, and you can always email me after. So these slides are from a couple years ago. I have not redone a survey since I took over as director, but I think these are still really important in terms of understanding the way that members and the education community, and I say education community sort of broadly, ACSA, NEA, AASB, even Great Alaska Schools, how the coalition is perceived as part of a broader coalition of organizations working on education. So we are kind of the legal watchdog. And I am paying a lot of attention to the maintenance of equity issue that is currently in play in the Capitol and with DEED, constantly looking at whether the REAA fund is being adequately funded per the ruling, I guess, that came out of Casile, and any other maintenance of equity or other issues that are taking place. So, for example, we are also looking at a public safety lawsuit that should be filed because of the condition of some of our remote and rural schools. For example, Sleep Mute, which has been in the news for quite a bit this session. So the strategies and priorities that were voted on at our November board meeting in 2023 was obviously and first and foremost to prepare for a potential lawsuit for lack of funding. And so to just let you know where we are on that, I have been working with ASD closely to develop templates to provide to other districts to gather data. And the reason I was working with ASD is they are a member of CEE, but also that they have the bandwidth, although everybody's overworked, they have the bandwidth to develop the templates so that it would be easier for smaller districts to provide data in a way that was apples to apples across districts. Moving on to communication and activism. So I am the sole employee of the coalition for now, and I work closely with, I'll say, the grasstops folks at NEA, AASB, ACSA, AFL-CIO, Alaska Children's Trust. We have a weekly meeting to talk about strategy, figure out what's going on in the Capitol, what are next moves. I travel to Juneau fairly frequently. As you well know, advocacy hasn't quite gotten us far enough over the last 2 years. It got us very close to getting a permanent increase to the BSA, but not far enough. I also coordinate on a weekly basis and actually continually with Great Alaska Schools as we push sort of a grassroots activism. And that has also helped move the needle. To be honest, I don't think if all these organizations weren't working closely together that we would even be anywhere near a BSE increase to the level that we are. We have a hiccup with respect to what the governor wants and what the education community is willing to compromise. So I will just show this slide that our priorities for 2023 and 24. So fiscal year 24 is what we follow, at the same as the state. We worked really hard to get SB 140 out of the House. Didn't quite get there. We're going to continue working on that. Obviously, we will, now that the ruling came out on Friday, which was quite the bombshell, we are working with legislators, and all the grasstops organizations are working to expedite a fix. And when I said that I'm the sole employee for now, I have just applied for a fellow. So I hope to bring on a very bright and excited young graduate to help run a communications campaign that would go alongside with our lawsuit, which I understand to be kind of critical because the legislature is still the entity that appropriates. So without putting public pressure on them, as in getting constituents to call their legislators, even with a lawsuit, we might not quite move the needle. We understand that teacher retention and recruitment is a big issue. We have supported the Divine Benefits Bill. I am hearing once again that that's not going to make it out of the House this year. This is its third legislative session, meaning the bill has been resurrected twice, been heard for 6 years. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to get it through, but it's not going to pass the House, but it will be resurrected next year. And hopefully we will have a more amenable House makeup. I am closely monitoring school construction and major maintenance. As I said, as trained as an architect, this sadly also kind of something that I have an interior lens to, having access to a lot of the condition surveys and why projects end up where they do on the list, which is a problem. But I have slightly positive news, and that is that the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee has recognized that their scoring criteria needs an overhaul. So that's positive. So they will be working on that over the next year, and I will make sure that whether it's myself or somebody else has an opportunity to weigh in on that scoring so that school districts aren't in a position that they have to spend a lot of money to redo their application. And if they don't redo the application, then they get demerit points, which is part of the problem and why Kasaili has been on the list, or not Kasaili, I'm sorry, Sleepmute has been on the list for 15 years and still not repaired. So those are our priorities, my priorities, our challenges. Continue to be state fiscal instability because there's not the will of the body. That's the term used at the Capitol to actually come up with a reliable fiscal plan or a comprehensive fiscal plan. And obviously we have a major issue with educator retention and recruitment. We also have the current administration's desire to implement a voucher program. So we are fighting that. I think that's fairly obvious, or I hope that's obvious. Alaska Policy Forum is working very hard to try and tie public education funding to outcomes, which of course we know is a kind of ridiculous distraction. But we will continue to fight that through our messaging. I think I talked through most of that. And then I wanted to share this with you, although these pictures, I did not generate these pictures, so some of these bullet points are cut off, and I apologize for that. But again, just pointing out that the perception is that CE is the legal arm to what the overall coalition of education organizations are doing. And, you know, whether you love or hate the READS Act, prior director and Tom Begich were, you know, instrumental in advocating for the passage of the READS Act. And then this line here worked over the past decade to move $2 billion into a major maintenance fund. There was a point where Dunleavy vetoed the bond reimbursement, or what do you say? Like he ended the bond reimbursement, but that didn't give him license to underfund the REAA fund. So we've ensured that that fund is still actually funded. Again, our core purpose is to champion adequacy and equity for all kids and holding the state accountable to its constitutional obligation to fund public education and keep public funds in public schools. This slide, this is a survey from 2022 that we achieve our work through advocacy and lobbying and legal activity. I failed to mention that the Coalition for Education Equity employs a lobbyist through the legislative session, that is Reggie Jewell and Christine Hess. If anybody doesn't know, Reggie Jewell served in the legislature a long time ago. He's from Kotzebue. Christine Hess was his longtime staffer and is a lawyer, and they are amazing. They know everybody in the building. They have longtime relationships with folks. And so even coming on as a sort of new executive director, even though I have some relationships with some legislators, they were instrumental in helping us advocate for the BSA because of their longstanding relationships with folks in the building. What I had hoped to get to this year, although the BSA and the veto has sort of sucked all the oxygen out of most of our organizations, I want to start looking at teacher housing grants and maybe application assistance, because I know that the smaller districts are so stretched in terms of their capacity. And we will continue to monitor tribal compacting and see how that all shakes out. What makes us unique? We advocate for equity of all the students, and we have an intentional focus on equity across the state, along with us being the legal watchdog. We are nonpartisan, and we represent school districts statewide to unite in our mission for providing an adequate public education. And we commissioned a broader study by Pikus and Auden that is underway to expand the report they did for ASD to expand it to more districts, our member districts, so that we get a better picture of what is adequacy and what is adequate funding to support adequacy in education. I really want to stress that even though I am a staff of one right now, I work closely with 20 people, 25 people almost on a daily basis to strategize and to hone our messaging and figure out where we need to put pressure on the legislature to move adequate education funding as well as other bills forward during the legislative session. I also want to relay that as a backstop for CUSPIC, for the Sleep Mute School, I recently applied to Senator Murkowski's office for some congressional designated spending dollars to try and leverage some impact aid grant money that Sleep Mute or CUSPIC already has. And I don't know if that'll be successful, but those are ways that I can harness my connections in the architecture world, architecture engineering world, and also just dedicate some of my time to helping on some very specific problems that are affecting districts, schools, and kids. So thank you for your time. I'm sorry that I am not really skilled at doing a slideshow on Zoom. You'd think by now that we would all have this down, but I really appreciate you listening, and I am happy to take more questions. I'm also available anytime, you know, text me, call me, email me. I'm happy to take some time to converse with folks.
Well, thank you. Caroline.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say the reason I had participated in a presentation during the fly-in in February, and that's where, and I've heard of this, I had heard about this actually when we were at AASB in the fall. Okay. I mean, I've heard of the coalition and their work. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that we had discussed last month was that, you know, you can join, our district could opt to join to become a member of the coalition. And there are multiple districts that we talked about last time that are, and then it sounds like now CUSPIC has joined as well. And so there is a cost, and it's been prorated. And I don't know, Caroline, if there's anything else you want to add about that part of the process.
Yes. So yes, we would prorate. I mean, at this point, it would even be prorated to 25% for the remaining of fiscal year. But I am in discussion with my executive board. The chair of our board is Jamie Burgess from NOME, and our vice chair is Patrick Meyer from Gateway. In front of the executive board right now is a proposal. Well, there's a choice of proposals to restructure our fees to make it more equitable for the smaller districts. Yeah, I wasn't part of how the fee structure was set up originally, but it doesn't work for me. So that is in review. So that in fact, the smaller districts will pay a much lower membership fee. And then it is on me to either supplement with grant funds or just get more districts to join. So I don't want the fee to be a barrier to districts joining. And I also want to be clear that when we file, which is almost 100% a certainty, the legal fees will be taken care of. Otherwise, we will not be asking districts to pony up any more money for a legal fund.
That's great.
Well, my thought is under new business, we could have a discussion on joining, making a motion and a discussion on joining. And then that way it would be decided at the end of the meeting, before the end of the meeting.
And Caroline, do I understand that the prorated amount would be $2,000? Is that correct for the remainder of FY24?
Is that Ms. Painter talking?
Luke Painter? Yes, it is. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry, I just can't recognize everybody's voice. I should have looked it up. Whatever, I think I sent you in a letter, it would still be half of whatever I sent you in the letter. Because we'd prorate it to 25% at this point in the school year and in the fiscal year.
Yeah. I think that's the amount you had the letter. So yep, that sounds great.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stay on for your discussion. But if you do have any questions during your discussion, you can just text me, and I think you have my number on my email signature.
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for taking some time. I hope you have a great rest of your meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move on to correspondence. Any correspondence, Mara?
Nope.
Okay. We'll move on from comments from the audience unrelated to agenda items. Okay, next we'll move on to comments from the audience related to agenda items. Okay, we got a couple. All right, Becky Martin and Brian Smith. Okay, so we have three. Okay. I don't think we'll go over our allotted half an hour, otherwise we can make an amendment.
So, I have a 3 minute.
I guess I'll put a timer up since we have more than one. Okay. Okay.
Thank you for the hours of unpaid selfless work you do serving balance needs of many different people. Struggle to allocate limited resources and are often forced to make decisions with mixed benefits. Please keep going. So many people depend on your dedication. Teachers understand this responsibility. While rewarding, teachers work countless hours outside their contract, and these responsibilities have only increased during the years I've been in the field. Unlike every other job I've held, teachers' extra efforts bring absolutely no prospect of increased income or career advancement. Only a loss of family time or personal time. 3/4 of our staff, including me, also belong to Tier 3 retirement system, which means no monthly retirement, no retirement insurance, and no Social Security. Petersburg's starting salary is currently one of the very lowest in the state, and even our top end is still in the bottom quarter. One may argue that teachers cost too much, that everything is expensive, milk, gasoline, houses. And if we can't compete with salaries in other districts in Alaska or our nation to pay for quality instructors, we're going to go without, as we've done in math and special ed this year, or we will waste resources training and losing staff as they revolve in and out of the district. Additionally, during our previous 3-year contract negotiating cycle, inflation increased by 15%. Since the contract only addressed a 3% cost of living adjustment, teachers are now bearing the burden of a 12% loss in the value of their salaries. Under the district's most recent offer, I can expect a real loss of income to shrink to 7%, ignoring any further inflation. I'm surrounded by dedicated colleagues who work hours and hours beyond the contract every week, and I can see the impact their years of experience, training, and knowledge have had on my students and my 3 daughters. This excellence is experiencing a seismic shift. My youngest daughter is preparing to graduate, and I don't see the same courses or quantity of applicants for empty teaching jobs. Though some may not realize it, school funding does not take care of itself. I'm sure you all know that. We are at a breaking point, and expecting teachers to take on more and continue to accept less is no longer an option. Funding must increase or costs must be shared. I urge you to continue to think creatively and strategically, like possibly joining the Coalition for Educational Equity, and using district reserves to minimize the damage to our staffing problems. Please continue your efforts to secure additional funds from the city and state's paralyzed BSA. This is a community and state issue that teachers can no longer hide. Thank you.
Okay. Ryan, I think, were you next?
Thanks for a chance to speak. So my name is Brian Smith, and I'm here speaking in terms of the agenda to the fiscal year 25 budget, specifically with respect to certified teacher negotiations. As a parent with 2 young children who's deeply invested in the long-term success of our school district, I'm here to speak my mind on this. I understand the district has not yet been able to come to an agreement with the teachers yet on cost of living adjustments to teacher salaries. I've been following the negotiations as closely as I am able to as a member of the public, because our teachers form the foundation of our education system. I've observed challenges to this foundation in multiple aspects, and has me concerned about the trajectory of our district's ability to maintain high quality education for our children. I'd be happy to elaborate on these challenges in a more long form format than a 3-minute public comment. But in a way, it is very simple. If teacher salary does not keep pace with inflation, teaching as a career will trend toward a non-viable career path. If we as a community don't provide the teachers needed cost of living salary adjustments, we are on track to being embarrassingly close to having the lowest teacher pay in the state. We will not be able to recruit high quality educators solely on the basis of our community and schools being desirable. Teachers can't pay their monthly mortgage or rent undesirable. I've been doing everything in my power to advocate for better funding at the state level and making sure our borough assembly supports our district to the cap. But there are district level decisions to be made at our current point in time, and our district has to show that we value our teachers if we want to be able to recruit and retain the teachers that we want educating our students. School districts may need to make even further hard choices than they already have about whether our limited dollars are better spent invested in things like sports and travel, or whether those dollars are better spent on keeping the great teachers we have and the viability of bringing in high quality teachers when positions go vacant. As you go into your executive session at the end of this meeting, that's scheduled on the agenda, I urge you to think more about the long-term viability of high quality academic education for our children than potential adverse effects upon the finances of the district. Public education is a service to our community, not a business. Please support our teachers so they can support and educate our children. And just as a final note, I would like to push back on some language that was used today on KFSK at lunchtime, characterizing the district's teacher offer as generous. I think that's a little bit disingenuous. On the whole, the district's current offer does not even keep pace with inflation. Thank you.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Alice Kumps, and today I'm representing APP as the APP president. So I am representing all of our members, the teachers at our school district. I just wanted to bring up some points. Number one, teacher retention. Retaining experienced staff is vital for the stability and success of our school. While many Alaskan schools struggle with high turnover, Petersburg has been fortunate to maintain its staff. Preserving the stability must be a top priority for our community. Two, comparative salaries. Comparing our salary schedule statewide, our starting salary is among the lowest, and the top end of our salary schedule ranks in the bottom quarter. It's imperative that we strive for fair and equitable compensation for all of our teachers to attract and retain talent. Point three, inflation and long-term earning. Over the past 3 years, inflation has outpaced the growth of teacher salaries, leading to a decline in real earnings. While we experienced a 15% inflation rate, teacher salaries were locked into a 3% increase over 3 years. As we negotiate our next contract, it's imperative to ensure that our salaries keep pace with inflation to prevent further erosion of our long-term earnings. While the teachers would consider an actual 11.5% COLA adjustment a reasonable offer, that's not what we're being offered. With the district's offer, over 80% of our teachers would get less or significantly less than that. And the most experienced veteran teachers would be getting even less than the current rate of inflation. And my final point, quality education for Petersburg community. The children and young adults of Petersburg deserve access to experienced and dedicated teachers who can provide them with a quality education. Investing in our educators directly translates to investing in the future of our community. By addressing these points, we can work together towards ensuring that Petersburg's teachers are fairly compensated, which ultimately benefits both educators and the community as a whole.
Anybody else wanting to speak to comments related to the agenda? Okay, we'll move on to then comments from board members. Okay, we don't have any. We'll move on to the consent agenda. I'll make a motion to approve the April 16th consent agenda. Second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Nicole. Any discussion? Okay, if not, Mara, could you please call the roll?
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Kay Holman?
Yes.
Great day.
Okay, motion passes. Next, we'll move on to our administrative reports. We'll start with Superintendent Clint Painter.
Okay. Well, I do want to acknowledge that we do have a lot of teachers in the room, and I'm glad to see everybody here tonight, and I appreciate the comments that were made. I wanted to first start off by talking about the upcoming trip this weekend that we're sending 32 teachers and aides to the Science of Reading Symposium in Anchorage. We are able to provide this professional development opportunity with funding received through the Comprehensive State Literacy Development Grant this year. So We're pleased to send that group of people up to Anchorage. Incoming Superintendent Robin Taylor and I continue to work together on budget planning, staffing needs, and federal program grant development. We work toward transition this summer. She's been joining us on grant meetings for the teaching and learning grant process. Just as a quick recap, I think that Carolyn did a nice job actually talking about some of the things, and I know we've been following legislative process as it's been devolving. Maybe that's a better word. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The legislation session continues. The House Education did adopt a committee substitute, which was HB 392. It did pass through over to House Finance. Essentially, the pieces in there that actually Carolyn was kind of referencing, and we've talked about them a few times, that it creates a termination appeal process through the Department of Ed, creates a charter school coordinator position at DEED, allows the State Board of Education to authorize new charter schools. The issue with that is one of the sticking points that I think she referenced, and we've talked about this, that it's something that bypasses local public board oversight, and that's a concern that we have. It would be the only public school that would be
on its own,
operated in that way, approved in that way. Increase to pupil transportation funding by 7.3 million. That would be helpful to us, as we've discussed. Increasing funding for the correspondence programs to the full ADM by special needs factor. Increase the BSA by 680, and including a $180 across the board funding proposal for all K-3 students to support the Alaska Reads Act with an additional $100 for Title I schools. That's a reduction to one of the other bills that was previously put forward, which was talking more about a $500 per student that needed additional support. Either way, really neither of those are really enough funding to support what we need to adequately address what we need for the Reads Act implementation. This creates continued issues with being able to create sustainable budgets due to flat funding and vetoes to education funding. This creates continued instability. And our district is no exception. So along those lines, we did discuss the current proposal today. We've been getting quite a bit of questions about where we are with negotiations. So we did provide some updates today, as some of the people here, I think, tonight referenced. We are still in the negotiation process. It's been the documents that are formal proposals between the teachers and between the district are public documents. We did have a mediation session on April 3rd that did not bring resolution to the process at this time. Yesterday, we transmitted a formal proposal to ATP, which represented one of the two options we presented on March 5th. We will wait to hear back from ATP regarding next steps with the counter proposal. And we'll go over a bit of an overview tonight to look through the pieces, because of the proposal that those are the numbers that we're using for our salaries for the draft proposal tonight, for the budget that you're going to be looking at tonight. So we need to talk about it tonight with more than just a couple of people that are on the negotiating team. We know these numbers are not set since we're still in the negotiation process, obviously. And I guess what I would say to that is that would, at this point, that's an offer we have put out. It is formal. We would not reduce something in that offer, I guess, is what I would say, because that's the lowest amount that at this point we would go forward with, because that's our proposal. So that's what we're using to reference our salaries at this time. I do think that it's important to acknowledge several of the comments that were made tonight. They are comments that we don't disagree with. We've had many conversations about this at the negotiating table with the teachers. We don't disagree with the conversation, with the focus on the inflation, with the focus on the lack of purchasing power, all of that. No one is arguing those things. I think the issue is that we're dealing with a very constrained situation and things that we cannot control. There are things we can, but there are a lot of things that we cannot. And so I think we still have shared goals. I don't know that we can make up the amount of inflationary issues in this cycle. I think that's the issue that we're dealing with. So I do acknowledge and understand. I certainly would let Sarah and Carrie weigh in as the other members on the negotiating team for the district. On that, I don't think anybody is not acknowledging those issues. I just want to say that publicly. So do you want me to put it on?
Either.
So I've got a few things that we just wanted to go through tonight so that everybody can see where we are. And Okay, so to go into some of the details about the dollar figures that we are using to move forward at this point in our draft budget, and again, this is a draft. These conversations are in the draft stage. So as of yesterday, this was what was transmitted. This has been discussed earlier in March. And we had given a couple of options. We were asked to give a decision on one. And so this is the one that we are moving forward with for consideration. There were a couple of offers that we had on the table publicly, and they referenced one of them that was included several articles that we'll look at next that we've passed back and forth between the teachers and the district related to several things, sick leave, personal, other sorts of benefits, knowing that all of those benefits do have a financial cost, which we acknowledge. So at this point, the other thing I wanted to reference, and we discussed this a bit today on the radio, is I do think that both the district and the teachers have agreed and acknowledged that, especially as was referenced, our low end, our beginning teacher salaries are absolutely not anywhere close to where they need to be. So we've all decided this session to move forward with bringing proposals that do raise that bottom end. So we're not trying to work with the same salary schedule that is currently exists, because eventually over time, applying straight percentages to those salary schedules create some inequity across, right? Because you have a lower salary schedule or lower salary on the bottom end, and you apply a 1% increase on that salary, and it doesn't have the same impact as it does on the top end of the salary schedule. It's just math. So I think we all agreed, and this happens a lot in salary schedule, they need to be reworked and readjusted. So we brought forward a proposal initially that did bump that bottom salary up, and the teachers also have brought forth schedules and proposals that also have that bottom end adjusted, which also does adjust the top end. So when we say mid-range, these increases, it is a little bit difficult to put an absolute pin in it, because there's larger increases percentage-wise when you have a lower salary than on the top end. So that's just to put some context to mm-hmm. to some of that. So, and that was referenced in some of the comments tonight. So a mid-range 6% in FY25, there's a coefficient adjustment that's been actually brought forward by the teachers and that we've tried to use and work with. And then a mid-range 3% in FY26, and then a 2.5% straight increase in FY27, which is more of a standard application of a percentage. That's sort of more of a traditional application. You get you have a percentage, and it applies across the schedule to everyone. So at the lower end, with that, with the bump, with the change on the bottom end, they would receive lower and anywhere from 15% increase on the lower end of the salary schedule to a 7.0% increase. This is across the schedule, across the 3 years. And an 8.0% with an additional $1,000 on the top of the scale. And I'll show you a few samples, and we do have copies of it here if people want to look at it. They're public documents, and you can obviously request the public documents from the teachers as well. And under this, just trying to give an average idea of an amount of money, because we do not disagree, again, that there are we all came into this process this year committed to offering and doing our best to have a generous offer. And I'm sorry that it isn't perceived as being generous. We do consider it to be a generous offer in this time that we're dealing with the instability locally and statewide. And we know it's not the teacher's fault in any way, shape, or form, but the district has to deal with those realities as well. So we're all doing our best to do that. Trying to look across this amount of money, what does that look like across 3 years? There's an average increase of dollars of 10,000. The highest paid obviously does see a lower increase, that is true, of 6,000 across those 3 years, and the lowest paid approximately 12,000 by the third year. I won't go into the weeds on these articles. These are articles that we have passed back and forth between the teachers and us. As I said, you always have to look at the articles in the sense that they have a financial impact. Everything does. So I think Becky referenced that about the 403B issues and the tier three teachers. We also agree with that. Tier three, we have a large percentage of teachers in tier three, and we completely agree that the retirement system does not meet their needs. We are absolutely in agreement. So there were some suggestions brought forward of some ideas and ways that maybe people could potentially cash out some sick leave days and put that toward with a match from the district. So there were some creative ideas, I think, there, and some looks at personal leave and some different salary and payouts for that. We, at this time, the top end, and I'll show you on the next slide just so you can see what that looks like with this $1,000 square on the top, the highest salary range. It'll make sense when you see it. And then at this time, and I do think this is an important thing to mention out loud, we've said this, we do offer a very good health insurance plan to our employees in our district, and that is a huge benefit. So we've really not wanted to go down into that benefit. We don't want to reduce that. We want that to be something that our teachers have. It is something that does draw people when they're looking at our district, and it's a generous plan. So these are anticipated additional costs, these pieces of around $47,000 a year. So that's something that we have to consider. What we did here is we just tried to give an overview, just to give some of the members on the board and publicly too, just to have an idea of what we're talking about, what we're looking at. Again, the information that's been discussed tonight and that we know, we do have a large majority of teachers. We have a lot of teachers that are in that middle and top end, which is great. That's the longevity that is being referenced here, and we agree. We think it's absolutely crucial. The current top salary that's been referenced and that's in this year's FY24 salary schedule is $88,362. And our last offer, looking across, and it does include an additional 1,000 outside the schedule on that top square, I guess, for lack of a better word, showing the percentages across and looking at 92,600 in FY25. And across to 95,583. And you can kind of look down through, that's a master's degree plus 32. That's the highest step we have. It's a step 14. Some districts go up to 18 or 20. Some have fewer, but some have more. It takes longer to get to a top corner in some districts. That's also can be a little bit challenging when you're looking and comparing different salary schedules. We've seen that when we've looked at them as well. So an MA 16, 81,520, and looking at the percentages across, and you can see what we're talking about, that we have adjusted some of those coefficients, that there is a higher increase at the bottom end of the scale than as you move across to the top. The lowest, as I said, we don't disagree in any way, shape, or form that $47,000 is not a reasonable step. At that lowest step. So this is where our last offer, moves to 50,854 in FY25 and across to 59,218 by FY27.
That's not the step. That is
what I'm someone sorry. Yes.
Who would earn.
Sorry.
Who would come in new. And at the end of their 3 years, they would be making 59,000. Yeah. So it's not the BA zero square.
Sorry. You're right. Yes. I apologize for that. The maxed ones are different that way, straight across. Yeah. So the percentages are shown of the percentage increase over what they would have made with no change to current salary schedule. This is with yearly automatic step that's moving down through steps on a schedule, and no additional, it doesn't account for additional compensation for education. So people can move across the salary schedule based on education. That's what like the MA 16 means 16 credits, or the BA 32 means a bachelor's degree plus 32 credits. So.
And after that three, does that mean you have three staff members in that category?
That would be like 3 years of experience. So it's technically a fourth.
Okay.
A fourth square.
Okay.
That amount of education.
Yeah.
Clarify that.
So up in the top two, we've got 9 members and 5 members. And what are we looking at then in those lower two?
We have, I mean, that's
one. That's where the bulk.
The next one has some, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of a scattergram.
Oh, okay. There we go.
You can see, and when we talk about max, that's what that means. When people have referenced that too, you get down to the bottom of that, like in BA 48 or the master's column, you can move over in a column. So that column could move over. BA 64, MA 16 could move over. The bottom corner one is the one that is that sort of that capped, that maxed one. And so these are an average salary here. This is our people. This is literally our people. And an average teacher salary would be at 73,000. And proposed within our district, looking at this next year, actual people, like what would that look like? An average salary would be 78,503. The lowest salary would be 53,201. That's actual people in the district currently. So we don't have a BA zero person. The highest would be 92,000 currently, and that's looking at FY next year. We do want to acknowledge this. We're talking about, like, this is something people talk about. We've had people ask us these questions about daily rates. What does this look like compared? We know it's a different job. We completely understand that and acknowledge that, knowing that our teachers obviously work more than 190 days a year. They obviously work more than a 7.5 hour day. We're just putting this here for perspective. These are the kinds of questions that we get in comparison. Yeah. I don't need to necessarily sit and read this, but we don't know the future. We know this. Everyone has referenced it. Legislature has been unable to increase funding inside the BSA. That's the biggest hurdle that we have, I think. In regard to funding, we have had one-time funding increases the last several years. They don't come till June. So we have to do a budget process now. We have to work with our borough now. We have to figure out if we're going to offer contracts now. And we don't know what that funding will look like. The governor showed what he could and would do last year. Both bodies of the legislature pushed and agreed to a 680 increase last year, and he cut it to 340 late in June and left Juneau with no comment. We had budgeted for zero from the state. That is what we based our budget on, and that was the right decision, looking at other districts around us and the situation that they are in right now and what they're doing. We are not in that situation right now. We also had a bump in students that we were not anticipating in the fall based on what we budgeted, and that was very helpful to put us in a good position this spring. Looking at a proposed one-time increase from the state, potential funding to the cap from the borough, our entire proposal, what we've been looking at, that offer requires us to look at reductions of approximately $500,000 each in the next 3 school years. We will not realize an increased revenue of $1.5 million or find $1.5 million in reductions to maintain a somewhat healthy fund balance at the end of FY27. And we do want that. We need that. The district is making a calculated risk with this offer in these times to offer a generous salary. We do believe that it is generous. We will be looking at going into savings to satisfy the needs of current programs, which do make our district attractive to students and families. Also, while looking at these wages, this wage increase, we want to give a bump. Now, we do hear people talking about this. We understand that it's that the raises that have been given the last two negotiations, we don't disagree. We don't disagree. That's what we're saying. We want to look at increasing these wages, and we want to look at giving a bump earlier than later. So this is given in context as we're moving forward with the budget presentation here soon, that will wanted you to have some of this context as we're moving forward. So okay. Any questions for me or Sarah or Carrie?
Mm-hmm. I thought you covered pretty much what we were been working with. Okay. We don't have any questions for superintendent's report. We'll move on to the elementary principal's report, Ms. Kahn.